Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broadwasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and you can't tame me. Take the leprechaun song, then throw it to the right, to the left, and cross the bridge, because he's a queer one, that man of mine. Oh no, a lover spat. Suddenly there may be tribulation, but somewhere love is waiting for you with all your heart. Just enjoy the ride, both parts, because that's how we change. Vagina. Joining us today are the usual corn pudding lovers, including Kevin, you done tamed me, Jager.
The part's so good because all that bacon, oh, it's so great.
Kimberly, you make me want to sing Game Master, an unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
And with us today is a man who needs no introduction, but we'll still do it because this is the part of the show where we introduce the guest. Now, the highlights of a wildly amazing career range from director, cinematographer, writer, actor, this, that, everything, TV, movie, books, and more. But you may know him as the director of the first three Men in Black movies, The Addams Family and Addams Family Values, Get Shorty, among many other things. He's one of the people behind the camera and the scenes of one of our favorites, Pushing Daisies, and of course, the recent Schmigadoon. Check out his book, Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother, Memoirs of an Erotic Filmmaker. But let's give a big, broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Woo! Well, hi, guys. Nice to be here.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
You bet. You know, I just have to warn you, I'm not a musical theater buff or fan.
Totally cool.
So if the game involves musical theater, I lose.
No,
definitely. Cut trivia is going to help.
Yeah, cut the trivia. Well, Barry, before we begin, we always start with, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking? Well, I will be drinking in 1 hour. I'll be drinking what I call a brutally shaken Belvedere in a martini glass. See, here's the secret to that. You never want to ask for a dry martini. You never even want to say a martini with no vermouth. The waiter will go back to the bar and say, give me a cold martini. So I say brutally shaken Belvedere. I don't mention the word vermouth. I try not to even mention martini glass. I'll often say in one of those things and I'll indicate with my hands the shape of a martini glass. So in an hour, when we're done with this podcast, I will be drinking a brutally chilled Belvedere in a glass that's shaped like you would put a martini if that's what you had gotten.
I love it.
Very specific. Kevin, what are you drinking?
I am actually drinking this Irish whiskey. It's a J.J. Corey Irish whiskey. It is fantastic. It's just kind of smooth and just really, really great. And I'm just drinking it over the rocks.
Cool. Kimberly?
My mom made me a drink because I'm at my parents' beach house for the weekend. And she made me a Saint Germain cocktail, which is Saint Germain, some club soda, and Prosecco.
Lovely. You know what? We call that a Hugo.
Oh, well, then I have a Hugo.
Oh, I love that.
Just add some fresh mint to that. Now, wait, where are you? Because there's a hurricane barreling down upon you if you're in a beach house.
So I seem to be directly underneath of the hurricane. I'm in Ventnor, New Jersey, which is right under Atlantic City.
Got it.
And it has started to rain.
I think you'll be okay. I think you're south of the big eye wall.
Yeah, my husband, who's still in Manhattan, different story. Kevin, how's it feel there?
Yeah, I'm in upper Manhattan right now, and it is actually not too bad. It's just pitch dark out. Like, it's been pitch dark all day, and it's been raining for sure. It's starting to rain a little bit harder as we speak. Mm.
Now, let me just say one other thing in my defense. The reason I'm not drinking yet are two reasons. One, because I want it to sound lucid for your podcast. And two, because I'm on Pacific time, where it's only 4:10 right now.
Yes, we should clarify.
Totally fair.
I very much respect that you're waiting until the appropriate 5 o'clock to start your cocktail.
What do they say? It's 5 o'clock somewhere, like where you guys are.
And yeah, exactly.
What are you drinking, Brian?
I'm drinking Love City Brewing's Lime City Lager Beer. It's a lager beer with lime and salt kind of in the brew mix there. This is out of Philadelphia, which is where I am.
That sounds yummy.
Well, cheers.
Very good. Cheers. Thank you for joining us.
Cheers. Thank you.
Clinkies. All right. So let's get right down to it. You were one of the people who produced Enchanted. You had a hand in pushing Daisies. It seems like you were meant to direct and kind of lead Schmigadoon, but you're not a musical guy. I guess, like, what turned you on about this project, one? And two, kind of, obviously, a lot of the songs, the script is pulled directly from things like Music Man, Oklahoma, Brigadoon, all of that. What did you feel like you brought to it from a musical standpoint? Or do you think you brought the kind of the ability to manage tone well, which is something that you do across all of your films? Kind of talk about your eye when it came to Schmigadoon.
So there are various people, when I get a script, that I ask to read the script along with me. Bo Welsh, the production designer who did everything from Schmigadoon, did the Patrick Warburton, The Tick with me, did the Three Men in Blacks, did all 3 years of A Series of Unfortunate Events. Mm-hmm. So Bo is a production designer I always work with. Rose Lamb is a producer I work with. She did the 3 years of A Series of Unfortunate Events and also did Schmigadoon, and my wife. So they all liked the six scripts. I'm not a Broadway musical buff. I said to these three people, I said, should I do it? And they said, yeah, do it. It's fun. And I said, it is. And they said, yeah, no, it's going to be great. So I said, it will be. And they said, yeah, no, it's going to be. So I, and also I really wanted to work with Lorne Michaels, who runs Broadway Video and was the executive producer on this. Mm-hmm. And also Cecily Strong had already been hired. She was the only actor who was on board when I came on. And I think she's great. She was great on SNL. And I wanted to see if she could be a full actor and not just a sketch comedian. Mm-hmm. And I was really pleasantly surprised. So I agreed to do it. I was living at the time in Telluride, Colorado. I went to meet Lauren in L.A. I was going to drive to Montrose, Colorado, get on a plane, miss my connecting flight in Denver, and eventually get to L.A. And I slipped and had a concussion. So that took me out of the running for a few weeks. But then I eventually met Lauren. And what I brought to the party were two things. One, consistency of tone. I say that all a director's job is consistency of tone. All a director does, the entire job description, is answering questions. And it's through an accumulation of answering banal questions like the red folder or the green folder, or huge questions like who should play Josh, and through the accumulation of all these questions, big and small, you create tone and style. So I watched a bunch of musicals. I asked Cinco, the creator, who wrote the songs, the music, the lyrics, and the scripts with some other folk. I said, give me some musicals to watch, because the only three I know are Monty Python's Meaning of Life, sure, Pennies from Heaven, and Hair. The Milos Forman movie. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a strong triumvirate.
Yeah, but they're not really, MGM musicals,
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He, He would give me these musicals, and I would call him the next day and say, I don't get it. I hated Carousel. I hated Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Brigadoon made no sense to me. But well, what I
you've also come to the right place, because we have very similar opinions on those.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so funny. But what I did know is that, unlike a lot of modern musicals, are shot, I think, totally incorrectly. They're shot with close-ups of faces, inserts of feet, rapid cutting because of all the years of MTV. Mm-hmm. And you look at all those old MGM musicals, and they're all head to toe. You see the entire body dancing. And that's the way musicals should be shot. In the same way, I've only directed comedies. And in the same way, comedies, the secret to comedies is a two shot. Don't cut to close-ups for the punchline. Don't ever cut to close-ups. Play it in two shots so you see body language and you see action and reaction in the same shot. So for me, one of the things I'm proudest of is that I shot Schmigadoon as if I actually liked musicals. And, you know, there's a lot of head-to-toe kind of dancing, because that's the way musicals mm-hmm. should be viewed, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's well, so funny. Oh.
No, go for it, Kimberly.
I was going to say, it's so funny because when we've been talking about Schmigadoon, watching the last 6 weeks, we keep going, it's so clearly made by someone like us who loves it.
See, that's the genius of being me.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you also say that, because one of the things that stood out to us were a lot of Cecily's one-offs, that she's the person who loves the musicals but is cynical about kind of what's happening, in terms of like when Aaron Tveit's character is singing to her and she's got those one-liners in between his musical phrases. That really worked for us because of that two shot, because right. It wasn't cutting to her, that's the joke coming back. Like, now that you're saying this, it's like something that's very subconscious, but like those are the things that hit us the strongest when watching these things. Mm-hmm.
And they're things we've said while listening to those kinds of songs. Totally. As very good. Big fans of musicals. Yeah. We've often looked at each other going, that doesn't make sense.
One of our favorite parts is when he's listing all the things he'll do to get the money, like all the synonyms for stealing. And right. She's like, that's the same thing.
Right. Yeah. I loved how she threw all that stuff away. You know, she didn't try to hit the joke. She's just, mm-hmm. you know, she's very flat and very, you know, real. And that's what makes it work, is Keegan and Cecily had to be very real so that all the other characters in Schmigadoon could be larger than life. You wouldn't want their acting to be at the same heightened reality as Alan Cumming or Chenoweth or Jane Krakowski, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you feel a difference having now... For this one specifically, working with actors who, you know, Broadway actors, theater actors who deeply understand not only where those songs come from in the history and canon of musical theater, but also emotionally, because, you know, at some point they've played the Lauries or in Oklahoma or the you know, Music Man and stuff like that. Was that an easier transition? Did you feel like there was more depth to it because of that? Talk a little bit about working with those types of actors in that medium.
You know, I think a good actor is a good actor. I didn't realize until late in the game how many people had done Broadway musicals or stuff like that. Obviously, wow. I knew Chenoweth had. But I really enjoy working with Broadway actors in general. You know, I did 3 years with Neil Patrick Harris. And sure. Also, K. Todd Freeman, who played Mr. Poe on A Series of Unfortunate Events, is a... Mm-hmm. Broadway actor, so is Patrick Breen. And what's great about Broadway, people that work in Broadway and movies, is in Broadway, you get to be, I heard that drink go, I heard those cubes shaking nicely. I'm very jealous. In any case, what's What's great about Broadway actors is that they can be big, they can be theatrical, but still be very real. And that's a really hard thing to pull off, to play a big performance, but still make it a real performance. So everyone from Krakowski to Aaron to Chenoweth, all these people, Ariana, have all been in musicals. So that was great, but I didn't think about it much, to tell you the truth. I just thought they were good actors.
I mean, that shows for sure. Did you have a favorite shoot day or song specifically to shoot? Was there something that you just like fell in love with the concept of the song or just how you went about shooting it?
Well, I'm going to answer that. But first of all, by the end of, we had 20 musical numbers. At the end of every musical number, you hate it because that night it's 4 a.m., you realize you still haven't fallen asleep and you wonder why. And it's because you realize that you're singing Schmigadoon with the sun in your head. And so I did a show with Chenoweth and Jeff Daniels where they were married, RV. And they sang Bonnie and Delaney's Never-Ending Song of Love. And for about a week, I didn't sleep because that song was over and over and over in my head. But so you hate every musical number by the time you're done shooting it because you're shooting it from all these different angles. So you're hearing it. Right. I think my favorite actually is Chenoweth singing Tribulation. And I'll explain why. She didn't want to do the show. She didn't want to come up to Vancouver. She didn't want to have to spend 2 weeks in isolation at the Sutton Hotel where she was going to be getting room service or takeout. Uber Eats for 2 weeks, but we've done 3 or 4 movies together. So I told her she had no choice. She had to do it. And she had this, like, I don't know. She claims it's 18 pages long. I don't think so. It's probably 5 pages long is the lyrics of this patter song that goes on forever and with tongue twisters. And I told her, I want to do it in one take. I don't want to have any cutaways. I said to the choreographer, I wanted to walk through every corner of the entire main set, which is Town Square. Mm-hmm. So she knew that song by heart when we did the table read before we ever started to shoot. She just stood up. She was off book and sang the song at the table read and got a standing ovation from the rest of the cast. We came together, we rehearsed at the end of a day so that the Steadicam guy and the cinematographer could see the choreography. We rehearsed about an hour and a half. We left the next morning, we lit for a couple of hours. We all came together on the set and we did 3 complete takes. We did 3 takes. She got through the whole song and the horrible thing is the song ends with a big special effect. A banner comes down from the ceiling, balloons drop. And if at any point at 3 minutes and 54 seconds, they screwed up the banner dropping or the balloons dropping, the fact that Chenoweth had done a perfect song wouldn't matter. We'd have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. So as we got nearer and nearer the end of those 4 minutes, I became more and more nervous because all you're thinking about is what's going to go wrong, what's going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. That's me on a good day is what's going to go wrong, even if I'm not directing. So, and Chenoweth, she did 3 takes. The first 2 takes, she had an earwig. And so she was singing and we were recording her live and she was singing to playback. You would hear the instruments in her voice. And then the 3rd take, I just wanted her to concentrate on performance. So the 3rd take, we played the song into the room. So that meant we couldn't use her live recording, but she didn't have to worry about it. She would lip sync to the song. And what's interesting is the take that's in the show is the 3rd take where she's lip syncing, but the sound is live recordings from the first half is the 1st take and the 2nd half is the 2nd take of the live. So, but since she's recording each time, to a sync track, we could drop it in. So I would say 85% of everything you saw in those 6 episodes, were live recordings. Very little were pre-records or post-records. It was almost all live recordings, except when there are 22 people singing and we, you know, their dresses would rustle and all that. So like when the chorus is singing Schmigadoon or Cross That Bridge, that's the playback. But everything else, every single individual performance is live, with the exception of Jane Krakowski singing in the car because we had a big wind machine.
Sure.
So that had to be her pre-record. But other than that, it was all live.
Cool. Well, so one last Schmigadoon question before I move on. What did you, as the director, what did you see Schmigadoon as in terms of like, were they actually transported somewhere? Like when they came back, like, or is that a secret? Like, what did you see that as?
I'm not a fan of musical theater. I don't know what happened. I'm telling you, you're asking me to tell you logically what happened when they crossed the bridge or didn't cross the bridge, because I don't think there actually is a leprechaun that looks like Marty Short. It's sort of like, so if you're asking me what do I think happened in the fictional story of Schmigadoon, I believe what happened is they left it so that there could be a season two somehow. And I think Cinco has lots of ideas about a season two. So we'll see.
Great. Well, speaking of season twos, this is season two of Tuesdays in the Corner with Kevin.
It's Kevin's Corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, where I get to ask anything I want to because it's my corner. So that's just, I make the rules. And today we're going to play the favorites game. So I'm just going to ask you your favorite fill in the blank, and then you'll just tell me what it is right off the top of your head. So we'll start with favorite ice cream flavor.
Mint.
Oh, he was right ready with that. Okay. Favorite breakfast food.
Eggs.
Do you have a specific way you want them?
Yes, sautéed scallions, and then the eggs are scrambled and put in a nonstick pan. Kind of a little bit on the loose side, which is surprising because I'm usually nervous about food.
And then they're served in a glass that you would maybe serve a martini in.
A brutally shaken Belvedere in one of those glasses that are shaped like those things that people drink martinis
in. That's amazing. Favorite band?
Oh boy, I'm gonna go with Neil Young, and so I guess I'm gonna say Neil Young and The Promise of the Real.
Yes,
which is his band.
Totally.
Sometimes.
Favorite movie that you did not work on?
Doctor Strangelove.
Favorite movie that you did work on?
I'm gonna go with the first Men in Black.
Perfect.
No, I'm not. I'm gonna go with Get Shorty. No, I'm going with Men in Black. I'm going with Men in Black.
Get Shorty's a close second, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Favorite piece of advice you were ever given?
I talk about it in the book. My dad said, don't figure out what job you need to get. Figure out what you're going to do in your life that will make you happy, and do that, and you'll somehow find a way to make a living doing it. So don't look for like a job, look for a career that will make you happy, and you'll figure out a way to be good at it. So I eventually found myself in film for lack of anything better to do.
That's awesome. Favorite piece of clothing you own?
Cowboy hat.
Yes. And then favorite place you've ever traveled?
I was going so good. I wanted to be the fastest guest you ever had. I'm going to say this weird cruise to Southeast Asia.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, of course. So this has been Kevin's Corner.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, that was a perfect segue into talking about your book. Your book, Call Your Mother, Memoirs of an Erotic Filmmaker.
Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother.
Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother, Memoirs of an Erotic Filmmaker. What prompted you to write it? What do you hope people get from it? What's everything surrounding that in terms of from your perspective?
So the reason it's called Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother is because when I was 17 years old and a senior in high school, Jimi Hendrix was warming up at Madison Square Garden. It was the first peace concert. And it was 2:20 in the morning. And while Jimmy was warming up, over the PA system came the following announcement: Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother. Now, so several things happened. First of all, since your page at Madison Square Garden, you know that means, and you're supposed to call your mother, that means your father has died. So by the time I get to the phone, the payphone, this is pre-pagers, pre-cell phones, I'm weeping uncontrollably because I know my mother has somehow gotten through all the layers at Madison Square Garden to be able to get me paged. So I'm weeping. Hi, Mom, who died? I thought you died. What do you mean you thought I died? Well, you said you would be home at 2. It's 2:20. I said, didn't they tell you the concert was still going on? She said, yes, but they couldn't guarantee you were there. That doesn't mean you're not dead. So I said, Dad's fine. Oh, Sonny, he's sound asleep. What else is new? So anyway, so that's how the book got its title. That's and that's why it has to be called Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother. Here's what happened. You know, as a film and television director and producer, I often have a lot of downtime. I can go years without working. Mm-hmm. There were some lousy days of weather in Telluride, and I decided to write an essay just for something to do, which was about the 9 days I shot 9 feature-length pornos in 9 days. And how at the end of those 9 days, I ended up accidentally being covered in human, loamy, warm, effervescent fecal matter. Okay. When a double insertion goes horribly wrong. So anyway, I was a cameraman on this because I had gotten out of film school and bought myself a used 16 millimeter camera. This is way before video or anything like that.
Sure.
My thinking being, once I got out of NYU graduate film school, that if I owned a camera, I could call myself a cameraman without feeling like I was a dilettante, because they actually own this camera. And I bought this used camera with a friend of mine, and he knew this porn producer. So he got us 9 days of salaries and 9 days of camera rental, which paid for half of the camera. It was just a horrible experience. So I wrote about it. Over these 3 days in Telluride, just for lack of anything better to do, years later, I find these 20 pages and I say, sweetie is what I call my wife. And she used to be an editor, a journalist. And I said, read this, tell me if it's funny. And she made the bed shake with laughter. That she was just in hysterics. Cut to, for 10 years, I had a column in Esquire magazine called The Digital Man, where I would write about, like cell phones and television monitors and walkie-talkies. And the editor-in-chief of Esquire was a guy named David Granger. Granger left Esquire, became a literary agent, and said to me, "Do you have a book in you?" He said, "Let's go to lunch. You have a book in you." And I gave him that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Give me two more chapters and we can sell this." So I wrote a book about being in a plane crash in Van Nuys Air. I wrote a chapter called Fear of Flying. And then I wrote the chapter called Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother. We went out to, we had meetings with six New York publishers. They all wanted the book and they all insisted that they would only buy it if I wrote it. Mm-hmm. They didn't want a ghostwriter because I have a very specific voice, which is Jewy neurotic, I guess, sure. Is strata of that. So I wrote this book and I loved every minute of writing the book. And I think what I'm trying, if there's any takeaway from the book, it's what Will Smith said to me at the end of the first Men in Black, which is, he said, "I want to take you around." Will grew up in Philly. He said, "I want to take you around to all these poor elementary schools in Philly and say, if this guy can become a famous film director, anyone can." And I said, "Thanks, Will. I'm going to take that as a compliment." And it's kind of, you know, all I did is I put my mind to it. And what I'm saying is, if based on my history with my narcissistic parents, the fact that we rarely had electricity, we rarely had our telephones on, we were always behind in rent, that if I can somehow, by the way, when I went to graduate film school, I hated film as much as I hated musical theater.
Oh, no. So you're saying you should go to musical theater.
When someone does things that are horrible,
masochist.
Yeah, I'm just a masochist. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
What did you hate about film at that point?
Well, I was not a film buff. You know, I was an only child, so I was not someone who had a lot of success in dating. So for me, I didn't really want to go to film the movie theaters with my dad. Mm-hmm. And that's the only person who was available to me. And then Reverend Ike took over my local theater on 174th and Broadway. So, for me, movies were about romance and all that, and I never had any dates. And it was about going to movies with dates, and I didn't have any dates. So for me, movies was just not in my wheelhouse. I love still photography, and for a while I thought that's what I would do. And then I realized that the business is too much being alone, and I wanted to be around other people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what brought me into the film biz.
So you said Strangelove is your favorite movie. Are there other movies, including that one, that you like to always kind of go back to and revisit for inspiration, or to, you know, movies that you watch to influence, you know, the future of your work, your current work? Is there like a vault that you pull from for yourself?
Well, Joel and Ethan Coen and I always watch the same two movies whenever we started another film. You know, I shot Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, and Miller's Crossing for them. We always watch Strangelove, and we mm-hmm. always watch we always watch The Conformist, which was another very stylized movie. So we really like to stylize things. I'm a big Kubrick fan, so I also love, 2001, A Space Odyssey. I love this Elliot Gould movie called The Long Goodbye. I think mm-hmm. it's a very underrated, very, very underrated movie with what I think is John Williams' best score. Mm-hmm. I do watch Pennies from Heaven a lot. I do watch those three musicals, Hair, and also, I like Monty Python's Meaning of Life because I used to sing Every Sperm is Sacred to my newborn baby, Chloe, as a lullaby, as an ironic lullaby. So there's that song, which we stole that. There's a dance number on Desktops. Mm-hmm. We stole a little bit of that from, there's a Bernadette Peters song and dance in Pennies from Heaven, where the kids are dancing on top of their desks, tap dancing. So we did a little theft from there for that. But I would say Kubrick's. I'm a big fan of Kubrick's. I really like Joel and Ethan's films.
Mm-hmm.
I like Stranger Man a lot. I like the Coens. I like Kubrick.
Cool. No, that's interesting. On that note, like, let's play a game.
Yeah.
We'll go easy on you. I promise. I promise. We'll go easy on you.
Can Kevin ask me more questions? You know, Kevin, just before we start, I play a game on the set, which is called Death is Not an Option. And there are two versions of that game. You say, who would you rather drive cross country with? And you pick that horrible person, you know, who's always in your face and doesn't, mm-hmm. or that really weird guy that never takes a bath, who's, you know, the third grip. That's one version. The other version is, if death was not an option, who would you rather have sex with? And the best answer, I asked Ethan Coen, if death were not an option, would you rather have sex with your mother or Joel Coen? And Ethan Ethan said, well, I have to keep working with Joel, so I guess my mother. And I thought that was a really good answer. That game is called Death is Not an Option. And there you go. So, okay, I'm ready to play.
You're the game. Barry, you're the game master now.
That's great.
Oh, goodness. I have a game called Musical Schmusical. And, you know, speaking of movies we must all know and love, I'm going to read you a one or two line description of either a musical from the golden age of movie musicals or a current Hallmark rom-com. And tell me.
I'm going to get this wrong. Ready?
It's a musical or a schmusical, which is the Hallmark one.
Got it. Okay. So you're giving us a two-line plot description of either a musical or a Hallmark, and we have to say if it's the musical or a Hallmark movie.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Just a simple either or. Brian, do you want to... now, do we all want to play as a team or individuals?
We want to play as a team.
Great. I like to give options. Okay, we'll start easy. Three sailors find adventure and love in New York during their 24-hour shore
musical.
Leave.
Musical.
That's definitely a musical. That's On the Town.
That is On the Town. A woman mistakenly thinks her best friend's husband is in love with her.
That's all you're giving us? That's like two-thirds of everything.
I know. A woman accidentally thinks that her husband is in love with her best friend?
No, that her husband's best friend is in love with her.
That's a Hallmark movie.
I'm going to go with Kevin.
I'm just going to say musical just to be the opposite.
That's the plot of Top Hat, the musical from
1933. Oh.
Ooh, I Top Hat. Okay.
I know. I've never seen it.
All of their movies are on HBO Max, I think, or are they on
Paramount Plus or something?
All their movies are on one of those.
Whose movies?
Those old MGM musicals.
Well, MGM
like
is about
all of Fred Astaire.
Well, Fred, MGM is about to be bought by Amazon, so that might change everything.
That's true.
Oh, interesting.
That's true.
We all end up on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, we'll get a nice James Bond TV show.
Right.
Oh, God. A best-selling author who got amnesia as the result of a car accident finds refuge with a local doctor in a small, idyllic Vermont town.
I'm going musical.
Yeah, I'm going with Barry on that one.
Yeah, that's, I agree.
Yes, that would be a Hallmark original called Falling for Vermont.
That's a good one.
Oh, God.
A good one. Okay. A ballet dancer and a showgirl fake a romance for publicity, but then they fall in love.
Well, then that's a. Does Hallmark do fluid musicals?
I'm going to go with schmusical. If that's golden age, there's no way they would have that kind of relationship.
The ballet dancer could be a man.
Yeah, the ballet dancer and a showgirl.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go musical.
It's a musical, I think.
I'm going Hallmark.
It's Shall We Dance, starring Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers.
I got to get onto HBO Max before they disappear.
Right. I'm proud of us all that we thought it was a lesbian story, though.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
good for everyone.
That sounds lovely.
Oh, my goodness. A strained father-daughter relationship is improved dramatically through the magic of rock and roll when the dad begins to realize that making a living does not have to mean missing out on what really matters.
That doesn't seem musical. I'm going to go musical.
Yeah, same.
I'm going to go musical, too. That sounds like that movie they made with Tim McGraw and what's her name?
Faith Hill?
Yeah. Well, didn't they make
probably.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's a Hallmark movie called Rock the House.
Yeah.
Is that them?
Hmm?
No. Cool.
No, I don't think so. All right. A marriage-shy woman falls for her therapist. Dancing ensues.
That's a musical.
Yeah, I think it's a musical, too.
Yeah, it's for sure a musical.
That is Carefree, also starring Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And that is the actual synopsis on Playbill.com.
Jeez, that's going to be a lot of help.
Yeah,
we're not. We're not helping Barry's love for switches love over to musicals.
No,
that's true. This is a bit of fun.
And by the way, and you're not helping me love Hallmark very much either. So.
That's true. Like, my Christmas pitch to you all about watching Hallmark movies with me is going down the tubes.
I was
going to
say Barry would shoot down all of these elevator pitches in 5 seconds.
That's right.
Barry got out of the lobby, he's like, nope,
no.
Oh my gosh, okay, I have two more. After two college music students intentionally fail their exams to put off the real world, they rethink their choice to stay in school when they meet the manager of a famous band and try to woo her as a way to book the gig.
That's an MGM musical.
I don't know.
No, I think that's a Hallmark thing.
I think I'm going to go home. I'm going to go Schmig.
That's the 1940 musical Second Chorus.
Wow.
Sorry, Chris and Burgess.
Wow,
Meredith.
Brian got it.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Would I understand that if I didn't see First Chorus?
Okay.
God.
Okay, and lastly, one. A struggling matchmaker is hired by a king to find his son a suitable wife in time for a national celebration. As the clock ticks towards the deadline, the matchmaker finds him the perfect wife, only to realize that she's fallen in love with him herself.
That's not King and I, is it?
I was thinking that at first, but no. Is it Call Me Madam?
Is that like the court jester?
We're going to go musical.
We're definitely going musical.
That is the 2018 Hallmark original Christmas film, The Royal Matchmaker.
No!
I thought that was the most obvious one. I read it out loud to Jay, and I was like, this is the obvious Hallmark.
Well, no. When you say, like, in a kingdom, I think, like, a big MGM musical.
And see, that's where you're not involved in the world of the Hallmark Christmas film. There's always a kingdom.
Okay.
Really?
Have we seen The Christmas Prince?
I've seen Princess Switcheroo. What's it called?
The Princess Switch.
Oh, but that's
the guy that plays the prince on Netflix. In this movie is going to be in the Princess Switch 3.
Okay.
There's a thing called the Princess Switch 3.
Yeah, which means in Princess Switch 2, there was just another one that also looked like them, and they all three switched around. So now is Vanessa Hudgens going to play four people?
I guess so. She's a delight. I'm okay with that.
Unclear. That was musicals, schmusicals.
Yay.
Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. Barry, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to link to his book in our description, so you can check it out there. Again, it's Barry Sonnenfeld, Call Your Mother, Memoirs of a Neurotic Filmmaker. Again, check it out down there. You can follow us at Broadwaysa on all social media. You can find us on things like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. 5 stars, please.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we didn't really say it, but like so many of your movies have just influenced how we see movies, how we enjoy movies. For me, you know, Men in Black, Addams Family Values, the Malibu Barbie ballerina Barbie scene is like forever imprinted in my brain. And everyone's quick retorts to empathizing with her is just like something that is very much like forever with me. So thank you for all of your work, and we love Schmigadoon, and we look forward to whatever is next for you.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and just a pleasure. Had a great time.
You put the corn in the pudding and the pudding in the bowl, and you put the bowl in your belly because it's good for the soul. That is our quote for this episode. Corn pudding.
Well, you enjoy your Belvedere.
Brutally shaken.
Yes. Yeah.
Brutal.
As we end every episode. Zoo-doo-wop-bop. Cheers. Thanks, Barry.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.